My name is Phil, and I will be your host for the 1001 Albums Journey podcast. On today's episode, I'm going to be talking about Frank Sinatra's 1955 album, In the Wee Small Hours. So let's get into it. So, taken from the Wikipedia page for this album, In the Wee Small Hours, is the ninth studio album by American vocalist Frank Sinatra. It was released in April 1955 by Capitol and produced by Voyle Gilmore with orchestral arrangements by Nelson Riddle. All songs on the album deal with themes such as loneliness, introspection, melancholy, desolation, lost love, failed relationships, depression, and nightlife. The cover art reflects these themes, portraying Sinatra alone on an eerie and deserted city street at night, awash in blue-tinged streetlights. In the Wee Small Hours has been called one of the first concept albums. Rolling Stone magazine ranked it number 100 on their list of the 500 greatest albums of all time. By the early 1950s, the singer saw his career decline. His teen audience had lost interest in him as he entered his late 30s. In 1951, he went so far as to attempt suicide, according to the author James Kaplan, who wrote the book Frank, The Voice. By the time he recorded In the Wee Small Hours, Sinatra witnessed the end of several relationships. He and his first wife, Nancy Barbetto, separated on Valentine's Day 1950. But while still married, he began a relationship with Ava Gardner. After he and Barbetto divorced in October 1951, he married Gardner 10 days later, but they were both jealous of the other's extramarital affairs. The relationship deteriorated during the recording of Songs for Young Lovers, which was his next album. It is assumed that this album, however, with the grouping of Love Gone Bad songs and Sinatra's poignant renderings, were a direct result of Sinatra's failing relationship with Gardner, to the point that these are called Ava songs. Nelson Riddle credited Sinatra's loss of Gardner with his ability to sing the type of songs contained within this album. The failure of this relationship did not shatter Sinatra, but instead caused him to sing more emotionally. So that was taken from the Wikipedia page for this album, and there's just a few things that I wanted to touch on. Firstly, the subject matter. I think it's a lot different with music today. I think you can be expressive in negative ways within music, more in the modern age. But back then in the 1950s, I would suggest that this was quite unheard of, having an album that featured basically depressing themes like lost love and heartache and things like that, and that really comes across within this album. Sinatra was able to almost harness that heartbreak and energy and direct it into his singing, which I think comes across. You can almost hear the pain, which is saying something, to be quite honest, because it's that sort of pathos that helps us connect with artists and musicians. So yeah, I think this was quite new for the time. Like I said, 1955. It was very brave by Frank to air his grievances to the world with this album. So the next thing I wanted to touch on was it being called the first concept album. Now, of course, a concept album is an album that all features the same sort of, well, concept really. So they're all about the same theme. All the songs in this album are about heartbreak, for instance. Now, heartbreak is the overriding theme, and therefore is a concept album. It's every song relates to that one subject. So to say this is one of the first concept albums is a pretty big statement. And no wonder it is included in the albums list, because think of all the concept albums that have come since.
If this is one of the first, then Frank Sinatra, Nelson Riddle, paved the way, really. Something else as well I think is worth touching on. I think it might have been very therapeutic for Frank in the studio to be singing songs of this nature after what everything he was going through. His divorce with Nancy, his broken heart again with Ava. But to be able to channel that and, like I say, put it into his songs, put it into his performances in the studio, I think was probably quite therapeutic for Frank and quite cathartic. Let me know what you think. I think it would have been. Another thing that's quite telling, I think, is we can all sympathise because we have all been there. We have all been Frank in this situation. We've all had our heart broken, should I say. We've all felt depressed at times, or things are on top of us. This isn't an album I would say you want to listen to if you're in a good mood. This is very much a bad mood album, really. Because if you were in a good mood, you wouldn't want to put it on to bring you down. And it's very much an album you can imagine someone putting on if they are feeling the same things as Frank was feeling when he sung the songs in the studio. So for that, and being able to connect in that way to the artist and to the songs, of course, is also probably a great technique that if you're ever feeling lonely or blue, this is when you put the album on. So you and Frank can have that sort of symmetry and you can feel together the pain of your heart being broken. So here's the first song, I'm just going to play it now. Probably my favourite from the album, to be honest. So here's a little sneak peek of In the Wee Small Hours.
In the wee small hours of the morning, while the whole wide world is fast asleep, you lie awake and think about the girl and never ever think of counting sheep. When your lonely heart has learned its lesson, you'd be hers if only she would call. In the wee small hours of the morning, that's the time you miss her most of all.
Yeah, that's a great song. Totally love that song. That's the first song I heard on this album's journey. The first time I put on an album from this book, that was the first song I heard, and it stuck with me ever since, to be honest. It's truly become one of my favourite songs that I have discovered. There's just something very relatable to it, something I can connect with. So I thought I'd read you the page from the book with the 1001 albums, because it gives a little bit more detail about things, and I think it can be quite interesting. So this is going to be from the book, this is what's written. In the early 1950s, Frank Sinatra was washed up, unable even to land a regular nightclub gig, much less a record contract. His saviour arrived just in time. Alan Livingston, vice president of A&R at Capitol Records, and a confirmed Sinatra fan, who signed him to a 7-year deal on the 14th of March 1953, against the advice of every colleague whose opinion he sought. Sinatra's Oscar-winning turn from Here to Eternity the same year showed Livingston's persistence. It also signalled the singer's second chance, which he grabbed with Songs for Young Lovers and Swing Easy, two of his other albums. Both are fine sets, but they are most notable because they introduced Sinatra, initially against his wishes, to a young ranger named Nelson Riddle. In the wee small hours, arrived not long after Frank Sinatra's relationship with Ava Gardner collapsed, and it is this split that defines perhaps the all-time greatest breakup album. The wise-cracking, finger-snapping Sinatra of popular legend is absent. This man is alone. Record store clerks who filed Sinatra under easy listening had surely never heard the barfly confessional of Can't We Be Friends, much less the pleading take on Cole Porter's What Is This Thing Called Love. Duke Ellington's Mood Indigo, meanwhile, never sounded bluer. Riddle frames this melancholy in wondrously delicate arrangements on what, in hindsight, is the first record where the pair really clicked. Others would follow, though, in a new and then exotic format, initially issued as two 10-inch discs. In the Wee Small Hours was soon reissued in 12-inch format, inadvertently ushering in the album era.
So, let me talk you through a little few things that I'm thinking about after reading that. The Frank Sinatra was washed up sentence is quite funny. He reached his late 30s and basically people didn't want anything to do with him anymore. Which is madness when you think about it. It's Frank Sinatra. Now, okay, this album doesn't feature any of his greatest hits, I guess you would say. The Come Fly With Me, New York, New York, My Way, That's Life. You know, the big ones. The ones people associate Frank Sinatra with. Alan Livingston, the VP, Vice President of A&R at Capitol Records, signed Sinatra to a 7-year deal against the advice of every colleague whose opinion he sought. So there's something quite poignant to that too. It's almost like an underdog story, if Sinatra can be considered an underdog, of course, you know how big he is. But I found that very interesting. That's almost like a I'll prove you wrong story too. To everyone that doubted him, this is for you. This is to show you I'm not washed up. I'm not over yet. Yeah, I quite like that. That's quite good. I like that. So here's another song from the album. Can't We Be Friends? Now, this is another one that stands out in my mind. Simply because of, again, the lyrics. And I think it ties in quite nicely with the first song I played you in the Wee Small Hours. So yeah, take a listen. Let me know what you think.
I took each word she said as gospel truth, the way a silly little child would. I can't excuse it on the grounds of youth. I was no babe in the wild, wild wood. She didn't mean it, I should have seen it, but now it's too late. I thought I'd found the girl of my dreams. Now it seems this is how the story ends. She's gonna turn me down and say, can't we be friends? I thought for once it couldn't go wrong. Not for long. I can see the way this ends. She's gonna turn me down and say, can't we be friends?
So there's another heartbreak song, really. I mean, they're all heartbreak songs, that's the point. But, you know, it's one of them that really makes you feel for Frank a little bit. You feel sorry for him. You can sympathise and empathise with him. It's very important in this sort of connection that we feel with music. There has to be some overriding feelings through it for us to feel connected in a way that makes us want to listen again. Almost like a soundtrack to our lives kind of theory going on there. So yeah, people can relate, and I think, again, that's what's so powerful about this album, is his ability to grieve, basically, for his lost relationships, but also, at the same time, be there for us during other moments of heartbreak, during our moments of sadness, loneliness, depression, heartache, all the things I mentioned earlier. So I thought it would be good to get some comments from people who like or dislike this album. It's basically an opinion part of the podcast. And I've got these reviews from a website called ratemymusic.com. So any album going forward, and I'm going to be doing these albums in order, get in touch, because I want to hear from you. I want to know your thoughts, and I'm more than happy to read them out on the podcast. Basically, get in touch with your comments, thoughts, theories, and anything in between. But until then, I'm going to take reviews from the ratemymusic.com website for this album. So in 2009, C.W. Thomas wrote this: "One has to keep in mind when listening to this that this isn't the true Frank Sinatra they are used to. There is no finger snapping, toe tapping going on for the duration of this album. Because hell, who wants to snap their fingers and tap their toes when their heart is aching? This album consists of a lot of crooning, so if you enjoy it, then it's for you. As a whole, I'm not quite sure what I would reserve this album for. If you don't pay attention to the words, it sets quite a good atmosphere for a dinner environment. But as it's fairly melancholy, it's probably best served when your own heart is aching. As an individual whose heart is quite ecstatic, it will be rare that this album comes off the shelf. Heartbreak aside though, the music is phenomenal. Aside from a few tracks here and there that have found their way into my days, this is the first real immersion in 1950s music. And I have to say that I much prefer music today to be backed by an orchestra. It sets such an epic mood, no matter the song. While making all of the songs on this album sound very similar to each other, the orchestra allows for the album to act as if one is watching a movie, albeit a fairly morose one. Ultimately, you can take one look at the amazingly blue cover art and understand, in a nutshell, what you'll be diving into when you pick this album up." So there's a few things there that I touched on a little bit earlier in this podcast, where it doesn't feature the familiar Frank Sinatra that we'd all associate, you know, the happy-go-lucky, cheeky, toe-tapping, finger-snapping, old blue eyes himself. This album is almost in contrast to that, which again gives it a uniqueness that I think is different from a lot of his other stuff, his more familiar stuff, if you will. There's also the part that they say it sets a good environment for a dinner party. I can imagine it in the background of a dinner party, probably just something light in the background to keep the guests entertained almost, and you have the background noise there, so it sets a nice scene, I think. So that's quite possibly a good way to play this album if you're not a heartbroken individual. And the part where it says it's probably best served when your own heart is aching, yeah, basically that sums up this album. If your heart is broken, then this album can certainly help you through it, or at least make you feel that Frank was going through the same thing when he sung these songs. So another review, which was posted in 2006 for this album, still on the ratemymusic.com website. They start with the lyrics: "This is a club, and if you'd like to go, you can meet somebody who really loves you." Now, I'm not doing a very good Morrissey impression there, but of course that's the Smiths' How Soon Is Now, which is a great song. So basically, Cancun's review start, and then you put the wee small hours on, turn on the stove, close the windows, and call it a day. "This album is full of self-pity, and I'll never feel better again. Gut rot that a freshly broken heart brings. Its mood is somewhere between a gloomy Morrissey and a half-drunken Tom Waits." So I think I need to give the lyrics for the Smith song a little bit more gusto there, I think. So I'm not going to sing them, don't worry. I'm going to talk them. "There is a club, if you'd like to go, you could meet someone who really loves you. You go home and you cry and you want to die. And then you put on in the wee small hours, turn the stove on, close the windows and call it a day." So yeah, this rating almost associates that Smith song, How Soon Is Now, putting the wee small hours on, indulging in your self-pity for a while, and then obviously, well, turning on the stove and calling it a day. So yeah, obviously some dark connotations to that, but I guess that is how you feel when you're heartbroken, like this pain will never end. And again, that's that pathos feeling of connection,
I can relate because I know how he feels. So again, that's very powerful, I think. So the next song I'm going to play is a little snippet of Mood Indigo. I've read a couple of times throughout this podcast that Mood Indigo never sounded bluer. So here it is.
Feeling goes stealing down to my shoes while I sit and sigh. Go long blues, always get that mood. Indigo, since my baby said goodbye, in the evening when the lights are low, I'm so lonely I could cry, 'cause there's nobody cares about me. I'm just a soul who's bluer than blue can be. When I get that mood indigo, I could lay me down and die.
They're probably my three favorite tracks from the album, to be honest. They're the songs that keep me coming back, and they're also the ones that stick in my mind. So yeah, I'm grateful for these songs. These songs, most of all, from this album. The album's fine. Like, I've got no problems with this album being included in the book. Anyway, let me carry on with two more reviews that I thought were quite important to read. So this was posted, again, on ratemymusic.com by CRK Drain in 2007. In the Wee Small Hours is the definitive breakup album. All similar albums that came after, Sea Change, Blood on the Tracks, Pinkerton, are just followers in this album's footsteps. First of all, let's talk about the title track, simply one of the greatest songs of all time. Sinatra perfectly portrays the feeling of loneliness in the Wee Small Hours, backed by Riddle's majestic string arrangements. Everyone has felt that way at least once in their life, and it's not at all hard to relate. And of course, you know that Sinatra is a very talented vocalist. His vocals are very smooth and soothing, but to be honest, they can get a bit boring and tedious at times. He's a very good singer, but his voice lacks personality. There weren't a whole lot of terribly original vocal styles in 1955. My main problem with this album is its length and its lack of diversity. With a grand total of 16 tracks, about 5 or 6 songs too long, this ties in with the diversity factor as well. Since all 16 songs sound very alike, you'll be ready for it to be over somewhere around Ill Wind. Also, nothing is half as good as the title track. You'll be waiting 50 minutes for something that reaches the bar set by the opener, and nothing ever quite does. Although, I can't get along without you very well, can't we be friends, and Last Night When We Were Young are worth mentioning. To sum up, and I might be contradicting myself here, this is an album that you probably should own. Oh, and greatest album cover ever? Quite possibly. So there's a few things to touch on there. The main one, mostly, I want to talk about is the diversity factor, where this rater said all 16 songs sound very alike, And yeah, I think that is true. But I think that also is why it ties into a concept album. So I think it's fair to say that, of course, the songs sound alike. They're all based around the same subject. But I understand what they mean when they say it sounds the same, because that can get a little bit boring sometimes, and it is quite a long album, like they suggest, 16 tracks. Bits and pieces there that I agree with, bits and pieces that I don't. So, again, everyone's entitled to their opinion, and this was theirs.
So now, as we're wrapping up, I think it's probably a good time to go through what I wrote for my blog for the 1001 Albums journey, and just to see if my opinion is any different, because obviously this was written a few years ago now, 2017 I believe. So this is what I wrote at the time after listening to this album. I can't say I'm a big fan of Frank Sinatra. I know mostly his biggest hits, but that is why I was looking forward to listening to my first Sinatra album and seeing what he was all about. My first note about this album is that Frank was very good at getting across how he was feeling at the time. And as I've learnt on Wikipedia, this album came after his breakup with his then wife at the time, Ava Gardner. And this album is referred to as a heartbreak album. That Frank makes it seem like he is in the room with you, sharing his heartache with you personally. It's like you can instantly empathise with him and know how he is feeling. I haven't been able to get the album's first track out of my head. For this song alone, I'm glad that I listened to this album. I found that while listening to this album, it almost made me feel sleepy and calm. I think it might have been Frank's soothing voice and the lovely melody and chimes behind some of the songs. It felt very relaxing to listen to. Many songs blended into one another, and if there wasn't silence between the songs, you would think it was continuous, as Frank's voice doesn't really change. I mean this as a compliment. He has a fantastic voice, and the songs from this album flow really well from one song to the next. This was my first Frank Sinatra album I have ever listened to. I'm looking forward to checking out more of his work. Perhaps a greatest hits album or something. So, my favourite songs from this album, I wrote down as In the Wee Small Hours of the Morning, the opening track. I love that one even now. Can't We Be Friends, again, for a similar reason. And I'll Be Around. They're the most powerful songs on the album for me. So the album rating I gave this was a 7 out of 10. I had heard of this artist before, yes. Had I listened to this album before? No. Would I listen to it again? If I was feeling blue or heartbroken, yes. So hopefully no time soon, but you know. Am I interested in checking out other albums from this artist? Yes. And then finally, of course, does it deserve its place in the 1001 Albums book? Yes. And there we go, we come to the end of episode 1. What's your thoughts on the album? What's your favourite songs? Come let me know in the comments, or get in touch. I'm going to try to be more active on my Twitter account, at AlbumsJourney. Please go give it a follow. On there, you can keep a track of all the latest news, all the latest blog posts, albums, and podcasts that I post. Lastly, thank you for listening. I really appreciate it, and I hope you'll join me again for the next one. The next one, of course, is the eponymous album by Elvis Presley. So I look forward to getting into that with you. If there's any comments you want to leave about that album, please get in touch. I'd love to read your comments out. Thank you very much for listening. I'll catch you next time. Goodbye.
In the wee small hours of the morning, that's the time you miss her.